Good evening. Welcome. Hope you all had a chance to catch that exquisite little sliver of a moon on the way in tonight. I don't think I'd ever seen it so slivery before. It just seemed about to break. It was so small. So. Gorgeous. I was on, got out of the car and got to see it again here and through the trees. And I was like, oh, let me get a picture with my phone. But my phone left it at home because it was charging. And I was like, oh, that's better because it never turns out anyway. I tried to take pictures of the moon and they're always blurry, so it's better just to look at it. I still would have attempted it had I had my phone. A short time ago, Ken Rinpoche was in town. Some of you probably went to some of his events, or at least knew of it. And there was a talk that was being given one night. And in the description, there was a phrase that just caught my attention. That I've been spending time with and been curious about. And it's just the phrase itself, because I didn't end up going to the talk. I was intrigued about how are you going to teach about this, and wanted to go, but also had a desire to teach Ian how to play poker and also get re-familiar with it myself and Wendy as well. And so stayed home and played poker, and Ian ended up $10 richer at the end of the night. Haven't played since. Maybe he has to bring the money forward, I don't know. So I'm not really, or not at all, talking about what was taught that evening. And in a way, I'm not really talking about this phrase in particular. It just happens to be the example. Because I see these kind of phrases a lot of places describing events related to Buddhism or spirituality. And this one just happened to catch me in a particular way. So what it said on there was, we can train ourselves to develop an unconditionally positive attitude. And then it went on a little bit from there. So there was one part of it, a big part of it that caught me, but a few smaller things that I'd also bring forward. So the first one was train. When I read that word, we can train ourselves. The image that came to mind right away was a dog. And animals in general, how we train them. And like, if you do this and that, you'll get the treat. And that's kind of what I was feeling in that phrase, is we can train ourselves to get the treat. And I thought, well, that's interesting, because I don't feel that we're doing that kind of training in this kind of practice. I would actually say it's that kind of training that we've already been schooled in that we're kind of undoing in this practice. I think the practice pulls out all those little cotter pins in our structures and then they get to crumble apart. So in a way, we're being untrained. And I think that can be a kind of training, conditioning, like strength training and stuff. It helps you for the things you're going to reach, but just my initial reaction and response was that of train. So I was curious about that. And then the next part was the unconditionally in front of the positive attitude. Because in that phrase, unconditional, except that it has to be positive. It's like, is that really an unconditional attitude if it has to be a positive attitude? So I was curious about that. But the most intriguing aspect was the positive attitude. And just the positivity. And that's the kind of, that general, maybe you recognize that, notice it when you're reading things, there's kind of that kind of idea put forward. So I look at it on one level, it's good marketing. Especially if the first noble truth of Buddhism is life is suffering. You want to counteract that with, you can develop some positivity, it's okay. Rather than saying, come uncover and embrace your misery, your despair, the darknesses that you've been hiding for years, which might and usually is our experience, but it doesn't make a good campaign. Necessarily. I guess it depends on your audience. But also on a personal level, it's appealing. You know, knowing when I encounter difficult times, heavy times, they're really uncomfortable and I don't want to be there. And I would like to live in the more positive times more often. So yeah, that's appealing to be invited to come experience something that's going to help me stay connected with the more positive aspects of my life. And on another level, I think this is the one I connected with even just like the others more strongly, was the kind of societal pressure to be happy and to be positive that we have inflicted upon us or influencing us, you know, as it ties into consumerism, buy this, you'll be happy, or basically the message that comes from that is if you're not positive or happy, in this case positive, then something must be wrong and you need to fix that. So if we take up the goal of developing positivity, then we have this opportunity to, every time we're not feeling positive, to think we're not doing it right. Something's wrong here. I'm not feeling positive today. So we give ourselves more things to worry about because we're not meeting the positive outcome that we'd like to have. And I think it really comes down into my own experience looking at it. I think in general, I don't feel positive. And I actually don't feel negative. I feel pretty neutral. And I think that's good. That's positive. In my experience, it's good and positive. Or it's just beneficial. The cultural thing that came to mind as I was considering this was the song Accentuate the Positive, Eliminate the Negative, Latch On to the Affirmative, but don't mess with Mr. In-Between, when actually Mr. In-Between seems to be the most realistic for me. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing to do about having to get rid of or encourage Mr. In-Between. That's just where I am most of the time. But it's not a state of blah. It's actually a feeling of vast openness and a very receptive neutrality. So I see heads nodding, so that's great. This is your experience too. Good. That's positive. Sorry. And as I've been hanging out with that, or just noticing it more, it's like that receptive neutrality is there, and most of the time there's a lightness to it, and something that might be called positive. And I think that's because it goes back to our fundamental teaching that we're born with awakening, the world's made of awakening. So when we are in that openly receptive neutrality, we welcome what meets us. And there happens to be just a lot of that feeling of awakening, of encouragement of life, of lightness. Even in the heavy times, even in the dark times, there's a little, the neutrality is there, and inside of it sits whatever's happening, positive, negative, whatever label we want to give it. But it doesn't necessarily, the emotion or the mental reaction, whatever it is, doesn't erase the neutrality. They just become really close to one another and blend. It's hard to say, but I'll trust the heads nodding that I saw before that you understand that for yourself. So I think instead of saying a positive attitude, I would say authentic attitude or genuine attitude. To genuinely be exactly how you are. From that place of openness and receptivity in which things land and from which they arise. So, considering that, there was a koan that came to mind. It's one of my favorites, just because it comes up a lot, and I thought it spoke to that place a little bit, or a lot of it. I don't know. We'll see. But it's from it's from two koan collections, but I'll just read the koan. The Diamond Sutra says, if people despise you, it's because of sinful karma from previous lives that has inexorably led you into evil paths in this life. Then, being despised by people in this life extinguishes the sinful karma of previous lives. Bells tolling. So I think, you know, setting aside somewhat the idea of previous lives, maybe even the sinful karma and things like that, maybe getting a wider view of the koan, but the spirit of it is what you're facing in this moment right now is because of what's happened prior to now. It's brought you to this place. And when you fully rest in that place where you are, it's extinguished. It's not something that you're carrying. It's not a burden that you're carrying anymore. It's not this heaviness, this trap that you're in because of the past or the recent happenings. When you rest fully in what is what I hear there. The word that kept coming up was the honesty of what is. And it's not being honest with what is. It's that what is itself is honest. It reveals just what it is to us. And to be fully in that place of the honesty of what is. Not trying to maintain it, not trying to reject it, just being fully in it. There's no separation anymore. There's no us in it. There is just what is. There's just the honesty. No reason to rationalize it, justify it, to do anything with it. Just be that. And then the case of the sutra, or the koan, because of that, it does something. Something transforms when that happens. There is this the quote, or the comment from Yuen Wu on the line about, you know, in these commentaries, he broke down every line and commented on it. So this was even half a sentence. But on the line, then being despised by people in this life, his comment was, paying off the roots has effects that extend to the branches. Paying off the roots has effects that extend to the branches. I love that image that came up. Of, you know, the roots from where the tree has grown. Go to that place. Pay off your debt, so to speak. Tend to that. And when you do that, all the branches are affected. Whereas I think I tend to try to deal with the branch that's the problem. How can I prune this the right way, or, you know, encourage the growth here, or just stop it off, you know, chop it so it doesn't grow anymore. And that has its effects on the tree as a whole. But to tend to the roots, to watch the effects extend to all the branches, and this way we had to give up the linear idea of a tree. This is a tree that grows in all directions. The future branches and the past branches, everything that's grown, when we tend to the roots, they're affected. It's like that domino effect we feel sometimes when we see clearly something that we hadn't seen, and all of a sudden, all the places in us that it was stuck before open. And when we move forward, we don't build them again. We don't trap ourselves, constrict ourselves in those same ways. So then we had to give up the idea even of these roots being the original roots that created this tree. It's like, okay, the roots of now. If we continue to tend to those roots, to pay off those roots, in essence, resting in that honest place of what is, that's going to help how things have grown and are growing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Good. Well, doesn't have to make sense. I guess that's all right. So there's a quote more from Yuen Wu in his commentary about the wisdom of the sutra there. Being that the koan is an excerpt from the Diamond Sutra. He says, "This wisdom is of three kinds. The first is a wisdom of the character of reality. The second is observant illumination wisdom. And the third is verbal wisdom. The wisdom of the character of reality is true knowledge. It is the one great matter where each of you stands, shining across past and present, far beyond knowledge and opinions. It is that which is clean and naked, bare and untrammeled. Observant illumination wisdom is the real world. It is that which emits light and moves the earth 24 hours a day, hearing sound and seeing form. Verbal wisdom is the language which can express it, that is, the present speaker and hearer. So in those three wisdoms, the first one I heard about, you know, just reality, bare and untrammeled, that's that place of the honesty of what is. And then, from moving out from there into the branches and the tree of what has been and what is happening, you know, into the reality of the world, which is shining with light, as it says here. And then, you know, really the essential thing is that it doesn't just stay there and be still. It's voiced through the, as he says, the present speaker and hearer, not referring to himself as anything, but in every situation, the one who is speaking, the one who is listening. Whether the one is a person or a tree, a voice ancient that we've been carrying around inside of us for years, or birds looking for food in the bitter autumn. In those hearers and those speakers, all the time, the expression of that fundamental reality coursing through the branches of the existence, spreading out within us and before us, yeah? Oh, good. Got notes. Keep me on track a little bit this time. So it's interesting that he refers to the Diamond Sutra as, you know, the scripture. They're talking about this wisdom, but then he brings in, an ancient said, everyone has a volume of scripture. It has also been said, my hand does not hold a scripture scroll, but I am always turning such a scripture. So a little history there with turning a scripture. That was reciting. If you're reciting a scripture, you're turning the scripture. And the image that comes to mind for me is the Tibetan style, and I think even in Southeast Asia, that the sutra is rectangular piece of paper in a stack. When you read it here, then you turn the page up. So you're turning the scriptures and you're reciting them. A traditional way of doing that was to turn quickly through the pages and just recite little phrases that were coming to mind from the scripture itself. So somebody might be turning the scripture by, we're going through the entire thing really quickly, and I'm saying a few points, and you're getting the essence of it just by doing that. And to help that along, Mahasattva Fu developed a case that to me seems like a Rolodex of sorts, where inside there's the scripture, long rectangle on a little spindle, and you can actually turn it. Flip it around real quick while you're saying phrases that you've memorized. Yeah? But that phrase or that quote about, I don't hold a scripture in my hand, but I'm always turning the scripture, takes us out of the realm of studying that paper or teaching. But what is this sutra, the scripture that I am, that is always turning, right? So what if we look at our lives as that scripture always turning, and each moment in our lives we're saying a phrase from our particular scripture? So we're always turning the scriptures, right? And that also seems to come from that place of resting in the honesty of what is, encountering the world as it's unfolding. I speak forth my scripture, while completely turning my scripture, my sutra, all the time. So a little later in the commentary here, just to speak to the idea of, you know, the power within the Diamond Sutra scripture itself versus the inherent illumination we all have. He says, Yuen Wu says that Master Ta Chu said, pile up several cases of scripture in an empty room and see if they emit light. It's just your own mind. Inspired in a single moment of thought, that is the virtue. Why? Myriad things all come forth from one's own mind. One moment of thought is aware. Once aware, it pervades. Having pervaded, it transforms. So again, that image with the tree comes up of the resting, the awareness is the root. And then that awareness, it pervades the branches spreading out, and then, just by doing so, it transforms. Not transforming into anything in particular, but it's released, it's free from moving from this to that, and then another that, to just being transformation. Transforming is happening all the time when we free it from those constraints, yeah. So a lovely capping phrase to all of this comes via another koan, which you may find familiar. It's from early in the Book of Serenity, where an Indian king, as was the practice in the day, the practice was to invite a sage, or a monk, a priest, to your home to recite sutras for you. In this case, it was Prajnatara, the 27th ancestor and teacher of Bodhidharma, who was invited to the king's house and was fed a vegetarian dinner. And then after dinner, he says, please, won't you recite the sutras? And she replied, I'm a poor person of the way. When I breathe in, I don't live in the world my mind makes. When I breathe out, I don't get caught up in the world of cause and effect. I'm always turning the wheel of the sutras like this. 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 scrolls. Just as each of us are. Continually. Resting in that place of the honesty of what is, yeah. Or even not. It doesn't depend upon that. The scripture, the sutra, is still turning. Again and again. Authentically, yeah. So thanks.